Welcome back to the Pegasus Podcast, everybody. Cookie, we've got a very, very special guest for us this week in our first podcast for the year, and none better than the great trainer based here at Caulfield, at least for the meantime anyway. He's trained more Group 1 winners than you've had hot dinners, Cookie, and it's great to have Graham Begg with us. Gra, welcome to the Pegasus Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How are things going? Your stable is absolutely low-flying at the moment. The last couple of horses you've saddled, at least two of the last three at Caulfield, have been winners, including one at stakes level with Dosh. Everything seems to be bubbling along nicely. You happy with how things are going?
Yeah, no, things are ticking over very well. It's the right time of year to have horses up and about, and particularly with all the yearling sales are on, and get a good bit of exposure. So hopefully we'll be able to get some new clients.
As you mentioned there, Graham, you must have such fond memories of this time of year. We'll get into Written By a bit later and your Blue Diamond success, but just such a fantastic time of year to have your horses going well and be in these big races.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the beginning of the season, really, as far as the new two-year-olds go. So it's great. As I said, you get great exposure if you actually happen to have a two-year-old which is up and about and looks like it's got good ability. So looking forward to 3 weeks' time.
Well, speaking of, I was about to ask you, you did throw a speculative nom in for the prelude this week for Dosh. I assume by your comment just then that she's going to bypass, as was your plan after the preview, and go straight to the diamond on, what date are we, Cookie? February
20th.
Well, I think what happens, you know, you have all your bases covered. You nominate for everything until you make a decision one way or another. So we had her in. So by doing that, she was able to have a nice gallop this morning on the course proper. Look, she pulled up really well. So I feel that she doesn't really need another run to go into the Blue Diamond. She's where I want her at this stage of proceedings, and looking forward to couple of weeks' time. She'll probably have a barrier trial or a jump out actually next Tuesday here at Caulfield on the course proper, so that'll just top her off nicely.
You mentioned Dosh there, Graham. She was so impressive in the preview, and the most impressive thing for me was the fact that she had one jump out going into that race and then just cruised the whole way and took it out. There must be a little bit of improvement left for the Blue Diamond.
Yeah, sure. Look, we didn't have a wound ride up. She certainly had a good blow after the race. Had a good blow, had a ridge down the middle of her back. Look, we had always had the intentions of going one run into the Blue Diamond. We had a good look at the history of the fillies over the last 10 years, which have won the Blue Diamond. It's very, very difficult to run in the preview, then the prelude, and then into the Blue Diamond. The fillies, which have won, they've either won one of the races and gone straight into the Blue Diamond. So we felt that was the right recipe. Look, you've got to be mindful there are still only two-year-olds who are pretty fragile, and keeping them on their feet and having them well on the main day, that's the ultimate goal.
It's a bit of a bugger the way the Triple Crown, so to speak, was programmed this year, wasn't it? The way that Australia Day fell on a Tuesday, you know, week and a half before the prelude. So we haven't really done you any favours there, so apologies for that. But I'll blame Racing Victoria.
Let's give them
a bit of a kick in the shins.
Not ideal. I'm sure they'll learn by their mistakes, because they are actually probably costing themselves runners to go to the backup race into the prelude. But it is what it is. We can't change it now. We just keep on going forward to the Blue Diamond.
Well, we're actually grappling with this because a similar situation is going to arise next year. So we'll take this on board and
absolutely
bring the preview forward and order can be restored. But, Gra, what about one of your other stable stars at the moment, Nonconformist? We're recording this on Tuesday before Ned CFO Stakes Day. You've nominated him for that race and also for the Carline Cup over 1,600 metres. Can you give us an early indication of where he might go?
Look, he's shaping up very, very well. He had a nice barrier trial over at Geelong last Thursday. He trialled behind Sir Dragonet over 1,200 metres. We always had the inclination that we'd head to the Carline Cup. We're just going to wait till tomorrow morning and have a look at the progressive acceptances and make a final decision one way or another. But at this stage, I'd say probably he'd head to the Carline Cup. But we felt that the ore doesn't shape up as where it should be. You know, we may go that way. But the horse is in really, really good order. Looking forward to getting him back to the races because he's still very untapped. He's a four-year-old, had 10 starts, and he's just been on the cusp of some of the better horses. So we still think he's got it all ahead of him.
He certainly has, Graham. Did it surprise you how quickly he stepped up last prep? He sort of went from maiden to sort of a Group 2 winner in the space of four starts. At what point do you know just how good this horse could be?
Well, he was always a bit of a challenge early. He had a bit of a unruly temperament out on the track, and once he got a bit of work under his belt and straightened him out a little bit, but when he won his maiden over at Pakenham, he won it in pretty emphatic style. He won by about four or five lengths running away from them. We thought, gee, this horse is certainly going places, and being by Rebel Raider, and his mother won at 2,000 metres at Flemington. We thought, well, this horse, if he can actually stay, you know, we've really got something. So we gradually stepped him up in Journey, and he got to the Alistair Clark, and he won that pretty emphatically. He's only had the two runs at 2,000 metres and won the Coogee Handicap as well. So, you know, obviously he looks a horse who, you know, 2,000 and plus, he'll be very well suited. But I think it's probably been a bit of blessing in disguise. We had a little setback with him during the early part of the spring and we had to change our plans. So, look, he hasn't been stepped up to 2,400 yet, but that'll come in the future. And, you know, he'll be a more mature horse when he's ready to do it.
We were gutted about that little setback he had because just quietly, the Pegasus podcast may have had a little speculative long ranger on it for the Stella Artois Caulfield
we'll
Cup.
We'll get over that one day, won't we?
Yeah, one day. Perhaps when he wins the Australian Cup or something like that. Speaking of the Australian Cup, I assume that's on the radar for him. And then Sydney potentially after that?
Yeah, we'll see. Definitely the Australian Cup. So, look, Saturday, then possibly the Peter Young, then into the Australian Cup. So we'll just, you know, work our way through it all and we'll just have a look at Sydney. I'm just a bit inclined not to want to go to Sydney because of the inclement weather. They get there in the early autumn. Yes. It's always a bit of a bugbear for particularly a horse like him. He doesn't really want too much rain.
So you're a proper Victorian now.
Absolutely.
Your comments like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just know how the Rosehill track plays and it actually needs refurbishing. another question for another day. Yeah. But anyway, you know, I really think he, down the track, I think he might be a really nice Doomben Cup sort of horse.
Okay.
2,000 metres round Doomben. So that's in the back of our mind. And then winter the horse up in Queensland. But look, there's a lot of water to pass under the bridge. So we'll work that out as we go through his prep.
You're mentioning Sydney there, Graham. That might be a nice little segue for us because in 2014 you had to make the decision to pack up the family stables at Randwick and yourself and Sue sort of took a sabbatical from training. Can you talk us through that decision and how tough is it to sort of pack up a set of stables where your father was such a legend for so long?
Yeah, look, at the time, I was really tired. You know, I'd been doing the same thing for, you know, nearly close to 40 years working for my father and then taking out my own licence in my own right since 1990. And we'd had a quiet season and we just thought, well, look, things weren't working out and we didn't have a lot coming along as far as young horses at the time. And like Sydney, it's a fashion thing very much so in Sydney. Unless you've got a big stable, it's very hard to compete, you know, and getting access to, you know, well-bred horses. Let's face it, you know, a lot of breeders race in Sydney, obviously with the Hunter Valley being so close. So we just decided that it was time to have a bit of a break, get off the merry-go-round and just have a bit of a chill for a while and sent my wife back to work. she wasn't too happy about that, but she went back to work and I was the house bitch.
Brilliant. We mentioned the old man before. Shout out to Neville, the Hall of Fame trainer. Cookie, a couple of weeks ago, 90 candles on Neville's birthday.
Is that right? Yep. Very impressive.
Bloody legend, the Hall of Famer. Tell us what it was like growing up, you know, with such a successful father and your kind of introduction into to horse racing and training thoroughbreds. Some brilliant photos that I've seen of when you were, you know, strapping Emancipation and obviously some brilliant times. But did you feel a great deal of pressure?
Oh, certainly. Like, to that, absolutely. A lot of pressure at the time. When I first started off, Dad went to Hong Kong to train. He got an invitation to go there. And I took over the stable. You know, so it was a bit uncharted territory for me, myself. But, going through a young age, and the stable always had very good horses. I was very fortunate when I worked for my father that I spent most of the year travelling. We'd go to the carnivals. Yep. You know, those days you'd pack up and you'd go to Queensland for 3 or 4 months, come down to Melbourne for the spring for a couple of months, and then on to Perth. And it was just around, just doing the circuit, basically. So I had a very good grounding as far as that's concerned. I was able to see a lot of top-class horses, top-class trainers and jockeys, so, and once again, in top-class racing. So I was very, very fortunate enough to be able to do that, and I feel that it gave me a very good grounding.
Jake mentioned some of those photos which have been doing the rounds, which are absolutely great. Are you aware that there is a Neville Begg fan club account on Twitter?
Actually, I do know that. I've a friend of mine from Perth, Scott, put that up. He's a mad collector of racetrack magazines and turf monthlies and race books and things like that. And, you know, he's the oracle of racing, this guy. So if he hasn't got it, it doesn't exist. But, as I said, many great horses and great memories over the years.
Well, on the subject of Twitter, your Twitter account is one of the great follows as well, because, you know, you retweet the good stuff, and, you know, there's a lot of replays of your horses being victorious and things like that. But I love it how you also give the trolls a bit of a whack. And I don't know whether this is you personally managing this account or not.
Yeah, I was wondering this as well.
So, for example, a good example of this was when Dosh won the, it was the Ottawa Stakes at the Flemington Carnival late last year, and some drongo was... Because as a lot of our listeners will recall, she was wayward up the straight, filly first time at the races. Geordie Childs did a magnificent job keeping her straight. She was stargazing, understandably, and someone's had a go at her for not being well-educated or something like that, and you've just gone back with winners a grinner's champ.
I think that might have been Sue, actually.
I was wondering whether it was Susie or Grav. That's great.
I've refrained from that Twitter, actually. I don't comment too much because sometimes I go a bit overboard. But people don't realise the amount of trolls there are out there. You know, like, we've had horses go to the races, and honestly, within... 30 seconds of a horse crossing the line, you'll get an email on your Facebook page, you know, bagging the horse, bagging the jockey, bagging the trainer. And, you know, it's just crap, really. Yeah. You know what I mean?
These
keyboard warriors are saying, bad losers. They're probably $30 punters, you know. Yeah. But you'd be surprised the amount of stuff it circulates, you know what I mean? And it's pretty disgusting, some of the stuff they say, you know. So... You've got to be pretty thick-skinned, but... and you know what? The best answer? You shouldn't answer them.
Well, yeah, true, but I do like it, like, when you give them... especially when you've won a race, give them a bit of clip back.
Well, just this week, Graham, I mean, from your account, I don't know whether it was yourself or Sue, we'll talk about nonconformists and which race you would head to, and I noticed Miss Siska is in the car line, formerly trained by you, now with another stable, and you suggested that Miss Siska might just join in the race as a pacemaker for your horse.
That was me.
Outstanding. But it's always great to see you and Sue at the races. You know, you're always there together. It's, you know, both lovely people, and it's always great to chat to. And I love it when you have a winner. I'll often turn around and you always give Sue a bit of a smooch, and then off you go to do the interview. It's all just bloody lovely. But how did you and Sue meet? Was that through racing?
Yeah, absolutely. Sue was an apprentice jockey in Queensland. I think she was the first female apprentice jockey up there. So it was on one of the trips up to Brisbane for the Winter Carnival.
What happens on the trip stays on the trip.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Anyway, but we've been together for a long time.
Oh, lovely.
And how'd you go in isolation together?
She did it tough because I was coming to work every day, so... But we did actually have a couple of moves. So we lived at Caulfield, then we had to move to Murrumbina because the place we were renting got sold. And then in the meantime, we moved to Murrumbina. We actually bought a house down at Mornington, which was getting built at the time. So so we had two shifts in the last 12 months. So, yeah, so it kept it pretty busy, actually.
And the isolation period, lockdown period, also meant that owners weren't able to attend the races, nor punters for that matter, for a long time. And until the weekend, trainers and owners weren't even supposed to fraternise at the races. Was that something that you enjoyed?
Oh, look, I know some trainers enjoyed not having the company of some owners.
Leading the witness here.
Look, I can understand. It's been very frustrating for the owners, you know, because they invest a lot of money, a lot of, you know, put their heart and soul into, you know, owning horses and that. And, look, it's just great that there's been some restrictions lifted this weekend's races. So hopefully, you know, there'll be more restrictions eased in the next few weeks and we'll get back to normal, which will be fantastic.
What about another member of the team, Graham, Geordie Childs? I know you've had such a great association with some legendary jockeys, you know, Dittman, Cassidy, Oliver. What is it about this young man, Geordie, that you've taken such a liking to and you've built such a partnership with?
Yeah, look, I think Geordie gives 110%. He works very hard. Like today, for instance, he rode track work here at Caulfield. He was here at 4:30 and then he left at 6 o'clock. He's jumped in the car and it's driven over to Terang, which I think is about 2.5-3 hours from here, to do jump out. So, look, he's putting everything into it. I think that, he's been very well groomed, obviously from his parents and his masters. So, look, he gives 110% and, you know, we're on the same wavelength.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did he combine with Written By almost by fluke? Because when he won his first race, I think it was at Sandown towards the end of 2016, was another rider was engaged but couldn't make the ride for some reason,
yeah,
and Geordie took it, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that his first ride for you?
Yeah, it was actually. Bradwell Willer was booked a ride Written By in the two-year-old handicap at Sandown in early December. Now, he got rubbed out at Moonee Valley on the Friday night,
right.
And he wanted to take his suspension early because he was locked into trying to get over to Perth to ride Blackheart Bart, I think in I'm not sure if it's a railway or the other 1800-metre race.
Yeah.
So we allowed him to get down off the horse and actually Geordie rode a couple of winners that night, and I thought, well, look, let's put a jockey that's in form, and I didn't know who Geordie Charles was. I'd never met him really, so, and he'd never met me either. So it just clicked from there, and it's been great ever since.
Sliding doors moment.
Absolutely, that's what racing's all about. So just getting back onto Dosh for the Blue Diamond, and I know Sue is actually the majority owner of Dosh, and those red colours, aren't they, the red colours?
That's correct.
And I know she's desperate to get that Blue Diamond necklace of her own, because I think when Written By one, of course, Neville bred Written By, so it was your mother who got the jewellery, but she's desperate to get a necklace to wear of her own, isn't she?
Yeah, that's correct. She'd love that. Anyway, we'll try to give her a best shot anyway, but the horse is heading in the right direction and you never know what happens.
With all due respect to the great Catnails Jewellers, the lion's share of the 1.5 milli probably wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't have
that's
thought. True. Tell us about the experience of winning the Blue Diamond a few years ago was Written By Gra. That must have been incredible.
Yeah, it was. Look, he was a bit of a difficult horse early on. He had a few barrier issues. He won the Prelude, and it wasn't till the Monday before the Prelude that he actually gained his ticket to go to the races. He'd won at Sandown, but then he got a warning on him as far as his manners, as far as loading in the barriers go. So he had to pass a barrier trial to be able to go back to the races. Anyway, we'd had countless hours of re-barrier education by Shane Stockdale over at Pakenham, trying to get him to settle down and be able to be loaded. And he actually trialled at Cranbourne on the Monday morning and got his ticket, and he won the Prelude on the Saturday and then 2 weeks into the Blue Diamond. But it was very frustrating, the horse. Highly talented horse, and we couldn't get his ticket to go to the races. So we had a couple of failed attempts of trying to get him past, but it wasn't until that barrier trial on the Monday prior to the Prelude that he was able to go back to the races. So we always sort of had our heart in our mouth sort of thing with him getting in the gates and being on his best behaviour.
Have you had a... he's obviously now at start. Have you had a look at much of his stock since?
Yeah, he's got his first crop on the ground now. Some very, very nice foals by him. Quite strong. And, yeah, we're looking forward to them when they hit the racetracks.
Chestnuts?
Mixed bag.
Okay.
Quite a few chestnuts. There's actually a really, really nice chestnut colt, which I saw. It's a half-brother to the horse that won the Winterbottom Stakes over in Perth. Oh. He's a cracker. So he's... He's a really, really nice horse. But, yeah, now I've had some very good reports from some of the people who got foals on the ground by him. So it's all goes well for the future.
Yeah. And what when you – I mean, you mentioned that it was really the 11th hour that you were able to get his barrier certificate after his first start to run in the prelude. What types of things do you do with a young colt like that to try and just get them there without sort of overcooking them or anything?
Well, he's a funny horse because, like, the more you rouse him up, he'd go the other way.
Right.
You just had to, you know, treat him with kid gloves. I remember that morning when he went to the barrier trials at Cranbourne, and we actually took him out and worked him prior to the trial. Young Thomas Stockdale took him over and worked him around the back sand there at Cranbourne, and actually really gave him a drilling, you know, worked him before and just knocked the stuffing out of him. So for him to be able to go to the trials and then back up and win 5 days later is just unbelievable because, you know, any other normal horse wouldn't have coped with that. So full credit to him.
Are these techniques you've picked up from your old man, or are there other sort of secrets that he taught you along the way that you still sort of really rely on to this day?
Oh, look, you just pick things up. You never stop learning in this business what other people do. And, you know, I think a lot of it is common sense. What to do and what not to do. I think it's just probably good management as well.
What about All Silent? He was an absolute star, won the Emirates over a mile, and then I think won the Group 1 over 6 furlongs the following year. You know, won all sorts of races. What did a horse like him mean to you?
Oh, he was a fantastic horse. There was a bit of backstory to him, actually. My father purchased him to go to Hong Kong to race for one of his old clients, and he didn't really settle in very well. He had a bit of a temperament, the horse. He was a half-brother to a very, very good filly that raced in Sydney, a filly called Private Steer, who was
dual winner. Yeah.
Stradbroke winner, Doncaster winner, all-age stakes winner, you know, dual Group 1 winner. You know, she was a great filly anyway. He went up to Hong Kong, and he wasn't on his best behaviour, so there's a rule up there, the owners can actually send them back to Australia and get a replacement horse. So, because he wasn't shaping up, and he'd only trialled on dirt track up there because they don't have many grass trials. Yeah. So he sent him back to Australia anyway. Long and the short of it was that we got him up the stage of trialling him, and we said to the guy, what do you want to do with him? Do you want to race him, or do you want to sell him, or what do you want to do? And he said, oh, I'd like to sell him. I don't want to keep him anyway. So we got an evaluation on him from Inglis's, and so we actually purchased the horse. So then my father decided to race him, and he won his first couple of starts. But it wasn't until we put the blinkers on the horse. He was like Batman and Robin, because until we put the blinkers on him, he was just going through the motions. And one morning before he had his first start, I put blinkers on him, and I actually trialled him in blinkers. And he really started to hit his straps. And so the first day we took him off to the races, I didn't put blinkers on him, and I didn't declare him to work in blinkers. I wasn't sure of the rule that once you trial the horse, you're supposed to run the horse in blinkers. Once you trial them in blinkers in Sydney. Yeah. Anyway, I got a phone call about 11 o'clock that morning. You've got to run this horse in blinkers, because we just thought we'd just give him a nice day out and then get him ready for a race down the track sort of thing. Anyway, he won his first start at 66-1 at Randwick. Come sailing down the outside fence, Peter Roble on him, and he got the chocolates.
A little something on for grab that day?
No, I didn't actually. No, I didn't. I was an idiot. Anyway, but anyway, he went from there, and he turned into a very, very good little horse. Unfortunately, he got EI during the period after his first preparation, and then, you know, we had a bit of a staggered start with him, actually, and he really hit his straps when he got to Melbourne in the spring the year after. And he won the Emirates Mile race. And he actually won the Saturday before on Derby Day to qualify get into the Emirates. And he won it very emphatically. But unfortunately, after that preparation, he started to have a few issues with his breathing. He came back and he was starting to go in the wind anyway. So we decided to drop him back in distance. But he had an autumn preparation and he ran in the Doncaster, was disappointing, and he just got beaten in a Doomben 10,000. But we sort of hatched a plan. Well, his wind was deteriorating, so we'd just keep him to sprint distances. And we brought him down to Melbourne with just two races in mind. We ran him up the straight the first time on Turnbull Stakes Day.
Gilguy,
he won the Gilguy, and he won that really, really well. And then we just waited for the... I think it was a Patnac back in those days.
It was a shout out to Nathan Tinkler.
Yeah, it was a collector's item, that trophy, they tell me. So anyway. So we won that race, put up an unbelievable performance, and, yeah, the rest is history.
In your mind, the best you've trained?
He would be very, very close to being one of the best, you know. Another great horse we had was Horse Monopolize. When I first started training in the mid-90s, he went to Hong Kong. We took him over there 2 years in a row, and he won the Hong Kong Bowl, as it was called.
Yeah.
Those races weren't actually at the time Group 1 races. They were domestically Group 1 races in Hong Kong, but they weren't renowned for being Group 1 races on the international stage. But for a horse to be able to go over from Australia 2 years in a row and be able to win... two on the bounce. It was a big thing. It was a big thing for my career as well.
Yeah. Well, Cookie, what do we have here?
I believe it's
lovely Yesha and Mwiran have been preparing those for us back there.
I believe it's a squealing... Is it a squealing pig, guys? There you go.
A squealing pig.
Named after me.
I think it's still the AM, so...
Well, we might as well.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Good luck to Dosh in a couple of weeks' time.
Exactly.
But I'd like to know, Gray, how all of these horses we've talked about compare to... the Great Emancipation, who you strapped. From everything that I've read, she was a real handful to train, and you basically did a lot of the hands-on work with her. What sort of experience did that provide you for the rest of your career?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She'd keep you on your guard all the time. She had a very aggressive manner about her. She was, you know, very, very aggressive right from the word go. She'd kick your head off, or, you know, all the time you just had to be on your guard. Bite you. I don't know how many times she bit me. You know, all parts of my body, you know. Go to put a rug on, she'd kick you. Go to saddle her up, she'd, you know, bite you all the time. But she was like a stallion, but anyway, but she had this really aggressive streak. And also, she was very, like, as far as training goes, she was always aggressive on the track. She was strong, you know. We had a guy that used to ride a lot of a track work, and he would have been probably nearly close to 10 stone because he was the only one that could hold her, you know. Like, she'd really, every morning of the week, she'd just give you a real job. But you know what? That cuts them because above the rest, those sort of horses, because, you know, they're competitors. They want to go out there and they want to compete all the time. But she was a fantastic mare. She, I think she won 7 Group 1 races, but she claimed some big scalps along the way. She beat Manicato. She beat Sir Dapper a couple of times, you know, so, yeah. You know, Manicato probably wasn't at his best at that time,
doesn't
but she beat him in a rider stakes. She beat him in a rider stakes.
He was flying, yeah. I reckon.
But he was a great horse anyway. But she raced against some very good horses and competed. Unfortunately, the Melbourne record wasn't as good as it could have been. She raced here at Caulfield in the 1,000 Guineas, and on that day they had a deluge of rain, and she drew off the track and she got trapped going up the hill and just never got around the corners whatsoever. But she had 2 runs at Flemington and won both of them. So she won the Manifold, and she also won the Carbine Club. But the other track she went to, Moonee Valley and Caulfield, she just couldn't get around the turns.
Yeah, bloody Caulfield, Graham. We've been saying that for years. But, hey, that hands-on aspect which Jake mentioned, I know your old man was sort of renowned as such a hard worker and so hands-on in his work. And even looking at you at Caulfield today, like, you go with every horse, you walk with it out to the gap, you walk it back to the stable. Like, is that something that you... Is that part of the reason why you've kept your stable numbers as they have, so you can keep hands-on with the old team?
Yeah, look, I don't like getting a, you know, big, really big number. 30 is about my limit. We've got horses down at Pinecliff, the property of Jonathan Munzer's. We've got 10 down there, and we have the 20 here at Caulfield. So we can manage that really, really well. So that's about the right number for us.
Yep.
We can manage it well. We've got very good staff. We're very fortunate enough to have very good staff. We'd like a few more because they're hard to get at the moment with COVID. But, look, the staff we've got, they're great. And, you know, they know their job. And, you know, if I'm not there, I can go away and know that everything's going to be well looked after and well managed. But, yeah, no, it's not an easy thing. You've got to be on top of everything all the time. It's just the little one percenters that you've got to be just right on top of everything all the time because, you know, as I said before, a lot of part of training is good management and just taking out the risk factors of things that can go wrong and just because it's so easy, horses get injured or things go wrong. If you just neglect one little thing or something's out of place and you forget, you don't address it, well, you know, it can lead to a much bigger issue.
Speaking of Jonathan Munns, he's a friend of the program. You've got Butter Chicken nominated on Saturday for him in the Autumn Stakes. Is she a chance to go around? Obviously, big leap from a maiden to a Group 2 against the likes of Crosshaven and potentially Amish Boy.
No, she'll wait. Okay. She's going to run in the Autumn Stakes, the 1800 metre race.
Yep, the Autumn Classic.
Classic, yes. That's right. That's the race here on Blue Diamond Stakes Day. She'll have a tick over barrier trial at Cranbourne next Monday, over 1200 metres, and she'll go to the Autumn Stakes. Follow a little bit of a path that Nonconformist did last year. She actually won the same race that he did at Pakenham. So there's a little bit of a pattern forming there. And then she'll go to the Alistair Clark. And if she's still on her feet, she'll head up to Sydney.
Anything behind the name?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. It's probably the best name in racing, Greg. Yeah.
Well, she's starting to get a bit of a cult following, actually. Just like the guy who went across Melbourne during COVID lockdown to get his favourite butter chicken. And Jonathan Munns has got such a sense of humour. And he named her Butter Chicken. Like, she's a very expensive yearling at the time. She was an $800,000 purchase at the Karaka yearling sales, being a Savabeel out of a Galileo mare. And when I saw the name Butter Chicken, I was horrified. Anyway, but look, there's a backstory to that. Anyway, at least Jonathan's got a sense of humour. And hopefully she'll turn out to be really good.
Well, it seems kind of stupid asking, given the quality we've already talked about, but is there another one in the stable our listeners should look out for?
Another one in the stable we should look at. Oh, look, we've got a lot of young horses coming through. You know, they're just feeling their way through at the moment. You know, we don't run a lot of two-year-olds. We're pretty patient with them. But we've got some nice, handy ones. There's a few which have got to go through to the barrier trial process and... And it's a matter of identifying those ones that we think are going to be a bit better than ordinary and take that process and look after them.
Okay, so no forthcoming stable star revealed. Graham's keeping his cards close to his chest.
Some sort of 66 to 1 winner coming up, I'm sure.
Nothing for JG and Cookie, unfortunately. It's sales season currently. I know you made a few purchases at the Goldie a couple of weeks ago. You've got hot hand at the moment, strike rates out of control. How does someone get involved with Graham Begg Racing?
Just go to our website, Graham Begg Racing, and there's the horses listed there for sale.
For you and me, Cookie?
It could be, and I'm looking forward to getting a big smooch from Graham if we get a winner, much like Sue in the mounting yard. So,
who's your favourite horse that you've saddled? Probably a unfair question, but...
That is an unfair question. I love them all, actually. I love anything, like anything that wins, you know. Look, we get a big kick out of any horse that wins. Like, we love them all, the horses, you know, we really do. I enjoy working with them, you know, at the moment. We'd have to say Nonconformist is right up there and Dosh is closing in very fast.
Well, good luck to Nonconformist this weekend, whether you do go to the Oar or... the car line, and likewise for Dosh in a few weeks' time. We always love seeing you and Sue at the races, like we said, and particularly when you're winning, and now we can actually celebrate with winning owners again. It's really exciting. So, Grab, thank you so much for your time today on the Pegasus Podcast. Best of luck, and look forward to catching up soon.
Pleasure.